Welcome to the SEO podcast, Unknown Secrets of Internet Marketing. My name is Chris Burris, owner of eWebStyle.
I am Charles Lewis, your internet marketing specialist.
Welcome back to another fun-filled edition. This is podcast number 221.
221.
221. As usual, there is a tip from our previous podcast, and that tip is make sure visitors can quickly identify what you offer when they land on your site.
Yeah, you definitely want to make sure that anytime you're getting visitors, especially paid traffic, which we'll be talking about today, some PPC stuff, when people land on your site and you've paid for that visit, you want to make sure they can quickly figure out what it is you offer. Really, they should have done that from the ad. And once they get to your site, it should be consistent. They should see exactly what you offer. And really, your CTA should be there. Your unique selling proposition should be there. Why they should use you. And the opportunity to convert should be readily visible on that landing page immediately. That way, you don't want them to have to search and find and click and scroll and have to figure it out, because people are lazy. They won't do any of that. It's easier to just bounce.
Yep.
So make sure people know exactly what you're doing as soon as they get there.
Because there's some other website out there that has a quicker process.
Exactly.
Make sure your process.
And he's like probably listed right next to you.
Yep. Yeah. So make sure that they can do what you want them to do as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, we are your friendly local neighborhood top position snatchers.
Yes.
Where our mantra is:
don't be a douche.
Do not be a douche. That is not a good look.
Mm-hmm.
Not at all. Although it is just a shower. if you can, tweet now. Grab your electronic device. And tweet. What should they tweet?
You should tweet hashtag SEO podcast. This is number 221. Be sure to tag us in it at eWebStyle, at Best SEO Podcast. And that way we can follow you back, link up, and do all of our social stuff.
Cool. Remember, you can do us one favor, and it can be done three separate ways. The first one is go on to our G+ local page, and we've made it easy for you to get there. e-webstyle.com/G+. Or slash.
G+.
Or slash.
Google+.
Or slash.
Google+.
All of those will take you to our actual G+ local page, where we would really appreciate it if you write a review. If you don't have a Gmail account, never mind, you all have a Gmail account. Next.
If you don't have one, you should.
Yeah, if you're listening to this podcast, stop. Pause the podcast.
Yeah.
Go create a Gmail account. You are going to need it, mm-hmm, if you're going to tackle SEO. The next thing that you could do for us has three steps.
Yep.
Go onto iTunes, create an account, write a review. And if you choose to send us an email, podcast@e-webstyle.com, and let us know that you wrote a review, we will give you a punch in the face. We typically give everyone who writes us a review a punch in the face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good thing.
That is a really good thing, by the way. The other thing that you could do is go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/eWebstyle. On that page, there's two places to leave a review. There's a little icon that says reviews. Go there, write a review, or just write under in the main wall. We're probably going to get rid of the reviews.
Yeah, because nobody uses it.
Yeah, right in the main wall.
It's hard to find. Like, yeah. It's just not intuitive at all.
Yeah, no. And you know what? It really sucks for us, because they've written the app properly so that the owner can't write a review. And in making the owner not able to write a review, we're also not able to see the reviews that have been written. I literally have to open up another browser,
go to that page,
click to the review, and then I can see the reviews anyway.
Come on, yeah. Facebook.
Well, it's that app. It's that specific app.
The review app.
Yeah, that's crap.
Anyway, it's still developed by Facebook.
Yeah, we'll pull it down. Remember, you can get a free website analysis. All you need to do is go to our website, e-webstyle.com. Somewhere on whatever page you land on, you will find a way to submit for a free website analysis. And bear with us, we've got a backlog. There's one other thing that I'm missing. Oh, we do have a referral program.
Yes.
If you have an SEO client, send them our direction. As long as they're paying their bill, we will pay you.
Plain
and simple. Now it's for our favorite segment. It's the algorithm cataclysm. Oh, that was awesome. You guys got to check the video out on that.
So remember, we've been noticing a drop in authorship usage, right? Not in authorship usage, but in particular avatars being displayed,
right,
in the Google search results.
Authorship avatar display.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay, so what happened is, back in October, I think it was October 23rd, Matt Kutz was at PubCon, and he said that Google was changing the algorithm to change how they would be changing it, to show, to monitor which authorship avatars were displayed.
Right.
Well, we noticed that effect take advantage on December 19th, is the date I've been getting from multiple right. sources, was when they seen a huge drop, like a 40% decrease in avatars being shown.
Okay.
And the reason for that is Google changed their algorithm. They didn't name it, so we're calling it D. Arthur. Right?
Not B. Arthur.
No, D. hyphen Arthur shit. But the reason for it was Google wants to only show the avatars of authorship profiles where they're actually engaged and active.
Where the author is actually engaged and
yes,
active.
Yes, on Google+. They're right. putting out articles that are getting pluses and that people are sharing because they feel like this author is putting out great content. And so, yes, we should feature him in these search results. And so if you have it set up and it was working for you before and now it's not, because you're either not active on Google Plus, or the content you're putting out sucks, or a combination of all of them,
or both.
Yeah, so definitely get engaged. Yeah. I think is at the end of the day, that's what they're making you do. They're forcing you to get engaged with Google Plus, and it's worth it because with the authorship there, your click through rate goes up.
Avatar there, mm-hmm. authorship avatar there, it does go up.
So set that up and get active on Google Plus.
Very cool. Let's see. We'll get right into our reviews. We've got one review and then one email. Let's just cover the email. Timothy Bond sent us an email, and he was like, he offered to beta test our app.
Mm-hmm.
And he's on an iPhone, so I mean on Apple device, iOS. And that one we're working on second, so we're just about to wrap up
the Android
right now. Yeah, we got the database over to the app developer recently. Next, we've got a review. Title of the review is Top SEO Podcast, 5 stars. Thank you. This is by Jan Hoops from United Kingdom. Punch in the face, Mr. Hoops or Mrs. Hoops. Jane, it's probably Jane. If you have a website, then you need to subscribe to this podcast.
This one right here.
This one. Every week, these guys share loads of useful stuff to help your website.
Except for last week.
I like the bit of chat. It stops the podcast from being boring. They do make me laugh. It makes it very personable. Keep it up, guys, and thanks for taking the time to not only sharing your knowledge, but improving the sound quality.
That's what's up.
Yeah, that's
like, long time listener.
Sorry, I've been listening for a while and only now just got down to writing a review. So, Jane Hoops.
Punch in the face to you. Appreciate your support. Appreciate you listening. And thanks for the review.
And if it's Jan, sorry.
Yes, our bad.
All right, and we got a little bit of news. I thought this was interesting. You know is it Gigabit? It's called Health Bit or something. The little device that you attach to your wrist. I wrote Gigabit.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Get Bit. Maybe Get Fit. Fitbit. Fitbit. It's the Fitbit. I knew I could get there circuitously.
So you didn't write Fitbit?
I wrote Gitbit.
And then you read it, was like, no, that's not right.
That's just wrong. So the Fitbit, somebody wrote a little article where they have replaced the Fitbit. That's the device that counts how many steps you're taking per day and you set up targets and everything. By the way, if you just buy the Fitbit, you will not lose weight.
Yeah, you got to use it.
Not only do you have to, looking at the data will also not cause you to lose weight.
Yeah.
You've actually got to use the data and make adjustments to how you create that data, meaning
in order to lose
more,
weight.
In order to lose weight. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a good point. Basically, the iPhone 5S has a motion detector on it, and so it's good enough. And so he replaced his Fitbit with it. So it's another situation where the sensor on an iPhone, iPad, or whatever is good enough and replaces a separate device.
I was looking to consolidate.
Yep.
And so, you know.
There was a net neutrality ruling, and the court ruling, don't worry if you're with Netflix, don't worry, that ruling will not affect your bill, at least not in the short term. It may affect it eventually. I thought it was interesting. The number one download site is Netflix, and like by far, it's like double YouTube.
For downloads.
So you're downloading a Netflix movie. Well, I mean, they're big, right? And they happen a lot because it's
Then you don't download from YouTube. So, I could see.
Well, no, as soon as you click a YouTube video.
Oh, well, you're talking about that loading process.
Any data coming down.
Okay.
Netflix is double YouTube, and then YouTube's next. And actually, upload, number one app was Torrent.
Of course. Makes perfect sense.
The one app that uploads all the time, Torrent. I thought that was really interesting, and they made the point that, so the whole net neutrality is, does an ISP have the right to charge more for data? So, for instance, in order for Netflix data to get to us, could they charge Netflix more because they're using more data? And
could, like, you mean like Comcast or U-verse or whoever, could they charge Netflix more?
And the answer is actually yes.
Yeah.
The challenge is that what so far what's happened is, you know,
if Netflix doesn't work if you don't have internet.
Yeah.
And so.
And a lot of people, it turns out, have gotten high speed internet specifically for things like Netflix. So if the ISPs go to Netflix and say pay, Netflix is going to say no way. And if they decide to cut the quality or the bandwidth directly to Netflix, then that's going to impact their subscriber base. Mm-hmm. So it's probably not going to have any boost in pricing anytime soon.
Yeah.
Apple refunded a couple million dollars, right? So it turns out when you have your kid playing on an app and you type in their passcode because they want to buy like a 10-cent whatever bone in some game or who knows,
whatever
right?
It is.
There's a 15-minute window where they can continue to buy stuff.
Let me get that game over there.
Yeah. So, and it's at least inside the app that you were in, if it's not everything. So that 15-minute gap has caused them
a whole lot of money.
And finally, what I have in the news is Starbucks admitted to in your Starbucks app saving your username and password in plain text. Yeah, it just should never be in play.
Yeah, kicking the shin, Starbucks.
Yeah, a little crazy.
So that's it. No Nest news. Google bought Nest $3.2 billion.
That's pretty cool, right?
And that's kind of cool and scary, right? Like, do I really need Google knowing the temperature of my house?
You think they don't know that right now?
And then I saw it on the news this morning about the Google contact lenses.
For diabetes.
I'm like, come on.
Now, I saw something interesting that Microsoft was actually working on a similar technology, contact lens technology, like 4 years ago, right? When it was considered science fiction at the time. And now we're like, I can see that happening next week or something.
Exactly. I just feel like they're using the diabetes and the glucose as a trap. I think you really want to see what I'm looking at.
Yeah, they want to see what you're looking at. They want to know exactly where you're at.
He looked at this car and his house was cold. And I'm going to get an ad for, you know, something that's going to fix that situation. Yeah.
Both that car with a room
on my phone
or a heater,
man. So
I don't know if Google Google toilet, and there's a really good video about what a Google toilet would know.
I know
about you. So that's cool. That is the potatoes of our podcast. Time to get into the meat.
Before we get into the meat, I want to give a quick punch in the face to Tony Silverino. He's at Tony Silverino. He says, at Best SEO Podcast. These guys are great. Always nice to hear fellow industry pros that know their stuff. Keep up the good work. Appreciate you, Tony. Yep. Industry pro, send us your site. Let's see what you guys do.
So one more thing before we get going. All the ways that you can follow us. Facebook.com/EWebStyle. YouTube.com/EWebStyle. Twitter.com/EWebStyle. And you can send us an email, podcast@EWebStyle.com. Thank you. Hit us up. We'd like to hear from you.
Mm-hmm. So I was on Search Engine Watch today, looking at a whole bunch of articles.
Aren't you on that every day?
No, I'm not. I'm using Search Engine Journal, Moz, Search Engine Land, Search Engine Watch.
My bad.
And I'm on all of them.
I didn't know you were a search engine person, magazine elitist.
Yeah, subscriber.
All of them.
Yeah. I am. Great reading material.
Yeah.
But check this out. The ultimate list to clean up your PPC accounts in the new year. Thought this is great. It's a new year. We got a couple new PPC accounts. And I had an interesting PPC discussion with a former returning client, you know, and so I thought, why not bring this up right now? And so it was written by Joseph Kirschbaum, a great article, Joseph. I pretty much digged everything you said, and so we'll dig into it. The first one says, make sure you're using geographic targeting and bid modifiers. So anybody who's doing pay-per-click management right now in AdWords, you should know what this means. If you don't know, then you probably shouldn't be doing it. But geographic targeting, make sure you're targeting the right locations, right? And unfortunately, I've seen it where people will set up a PPC campaign and they provide a local service or their product is only available in a certain area, but they haven't turned on any geo modifiers and so or geo targeting. And so the ads have been run everywhere. And then they come to us asking for SEO, saying that the PPC didn't work.
Time and time again.
And that's because they didn't do it right. So make sure you're targeting the right area. Well, speaking of targeting, number two is language targeting. I think this is key, and it's becoming more and more of importance. You know, you used to just kind of default to English, and that was it. But let's say your location is in a specific area of town. Like in Houston, we have areas that are, you know, predominantly Hispanic or predominantly Black or Asian or whatnot. And if you're in that area.
By the way, this is interesting. I'm sure a lot of people won't believe this in the whole kind of world that our podcast gets to. Houston, Texas,
yeah,
is one of the most diverse metropolitan cities in the city of Houston. I mean,
in the country,
the United States. Mm-hmm. You think, you know, immediately New York or whatever. We're actually on par and or surpass. And what I read briefly one time was that we actually are a more diverse group. And then I had an interesting conversation with somebody who was saying, yeah, New York is diverse and segregated. Right, so the Nigerians are all together, the Indians are all together, the Pakistanis
and they don't blend,
and so there's borders and distinct mm-hmm. groups. And if that's the definition, clearly, like, we don't have that much. We don't have places where Asians live or places where only Latinos live.
Well, we do, but not to the aspect it is on the East Coast.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. I mean, we have a Chinatown, right?
Yeah.
We have, you know, certain areas in the city. But you're right. There's nothing compared to
a lot more intermingled mm-hmm. and apparently a lot more diverse. Anyway, I thought you just, you know, this cow town is actually a diverse metropolitan area.
So
and no, we do not ride horses to work. Unless
now, what was interesting about that? But my brother-in-law was down from Boston, and he was here for a wedding, and I was taking him up 288, and he was stuck looking out the window, like horses and cows
out the window. And there's downtown,
right there.
Yeah,
and there's downtown. Yeah. So yeah, but back to the subject. Yeah. If you're in an area and your service is only offered in a specific area, and that area is made up of a certain type of people, then changing your language in your ad could increase your conversions.
Yep.
I mean, if people can see it in their native language, I would convert.
Yep.
So consider that. The next one, mobile bid modifiers. This is key. Because, you know, maybe a couple years ago, Google didn't have this option a couple years ago.
Right.
But now that they do, it's a reason they do. Because mobile is bringing more and more traffic to your site. And if you convert mobile, and, you know, let me stop here and say analytics must be set up. And I think that's one of the points we'll get to later. Because that's the only way you'll know if mobile is really working for you, is if you're tracking it and monitoring your conversions. And if you are tracking it and you're noticing an increase in mobile conversions, let's say higher than tablets or desktops, then increase your mobile bid. You know, why not spend most of that money where you're converting the most? So that's that. The next one, ad scheduling. You know, he goes on to say, make sure you schedule your ads to improve performance. That's key.
Don't throw away money on ads geared towards creating phone calls when you aren't answering your phone.
Yeah, I mean, if you're open from 9 to 5, then run your ads from, you know, 10 to 4.
Unless form submissions are totally acceptable to you,
then that's
a different. Just be aware of it.
So run your ads, or maybe you're open 24 hours, but you notice between the hours of 3 and 6, you get a ton of business.
Or you get an equal amount of calls, but they close more.
Yeah, they may be higher close ratio at that time. Run your ads then. Schedule them to be shown prominently then. So, and then adjust that mobile bid, right? The next one, ad rotation and delivery. I think this one is kind of similar to the ad scheduling. It really depends on the business type. In regards to delivery, when you go into AdWords, you'll see an option for like accelerated delivery, or they'll run through your ads real quick, or you'll get an option to spread it out evenly over time. I think this, again, similar to the ad scheduling, just really depends on the nature of your business. If you could benefit from just having ads consistently shown all day, all night, then spread it out over time. But again, if you're in the office for a certain period of time, I would go accelerate it and I would schedule it and I would ramp up early, right? And so that way my budget would be out and I can handle all of my leads and everything before I went home. So consider that. The next one, ad copy. This is key. Test ads all the time is what Joseph says here, and I highlighted that, and I totally agree. And after you finish testing the ad, test it again. And then after you finish testing that one, write another one and test that one.
Yep.
And then keep you a control ad, right? The one that's working, the one that's converting. Create variations of that ad to test it against. And if you create one that happens to beat that one, looks like you have a new control ad. And then you start the process all over again.
And also keep an eye on other ads, right? So do searches for yourself. Not too often. We don't recommend you go very often. Don't want to inflate your impressions.
Mm-hmm.
And look at some of the other ads. Maybe they're totally different than yours. And they have an impact on you. Try it.
Yeah.
Because maybe yours is a really good performer and that one's a slightly better performer, but it would have never been an iteration of your currently good performing ad. Like, exactly. you know.
They may be using one word in their ad that you're not using in yours that could change,
you know, everything. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So check your ad copy. After that, check your landing pages, right? Just like ads, you want to target landing pages and you want to test them, right? Does this form work better lower or higher? Does call now work or call today work, right? Does the bigger phone number work or the smaller phone number with the colored background work? That sort of deal. Does the smiling face work or the sad face work, right? Just the images and all of the components that make up your landing page. Test them. Test them and then test them again, especially if you have the resources to do it, right? If you have an in-house person managing that, then it should be a little easier.
Yep.
If you're dealing with an agency like ours, then just they should be testing it for you. And if they're not, come holler at us. So that was landing pages. The next one here, which is kind of key, tracking and URL parameters. Tracking URLs can get kind of tricky and picky. And I don't stay away from it. I use Google's geo auto tagging. Let them auto tag it themselves. That way I won't mess up anything. Because if you miss a character or add a space or do anything like that, then you still get the click, still cost you money, but you don't have any way to track it and see what happened from there.
Yeah.
And then it could very well go to a broken page. Now that's a possibility. And so if you're going to do any tracking of the URLs, just be thorough at it. Make sure you do it well. There's a reason for it. You know,
and
some
test
people,
it.
Yeah, and test it. Yeah. Exactly. So do that. Shared budgets. In AdWords, you can share a daily budget between campaigns. We do it all the time. I think the key here is to just monitor it, right? What you don't want to happen when you're sharing those budgets is one campaign generating a lot of impressions and clicks and not converting well, and you have another campaign that's, let's say, not getting many impressions and getting few clicks, but it's converting extremely well. But the underperforming account, since it's getting more clicks, is absorbing all of that shared budget. And now the campaign that could really use those funds because it's converting doesn't have budget to use. So when you're sharing budgets like that, you have to be cautious, right, about the campaigns, and you really have to monitor them. Speaking of shared, a shared negative list. I recommend this, but I recommend taking it a step further, right? So maybe your common negatives should go across the whole campaign. Things like do it yourself or free and things like that,
right,
that you may not be offering. But then if you have ad group specific negatives, then use those, and you should have ad group specific negatives.
Yeah.
If you have a whole, you know, more than 10 or 15 phrases, then there are likely some negative words that you could be using. And so do that. Now, a good way I find negatives is do what you said earlier. When you search and you look at your competitors' ads, I mean, I do it all the time. And I say, oh, that's a bad ad. Why are they bidding on that? Or why are they using that ad text? Or why'd they say that? I wouldn't say that.
Nice negative word.
Nice negative word, right? Go add that to my negative. So, because Google will say it for you, right?
Right.
You know, if you're using, you know, broad match or something. So you don't want to do that.
So in that case, you end up, for a bad search term, letting the other competitors waste their budget.
Exactly. Search partner network. This is key. You just want to make sure your search partners, if you have search partners turned on, that is performing well. Because those partners tend to perform a little different than, let's say, a search directly on Google. And so you want to just monitor that. But Display Network, one of the ones I want to focus on right now, and really in two places, right? I try to stay away from just doing Display Network and putting ads out there everywhere because I like the other features that it has.
So you can lock down Display Network. There's some good tools to good ways to organize that.
I mean, I like using the two I want to talk about right now are placements and remarketing. And we'll start with placements, right? So if let's say you have a client who is running television ads, okay, why not create some sort of banner or ad that is comparative to that television ad and has the same branding and look and feel of the site, and then place those ads on the sites for those television stations, right? Now, that's a managed placement, right? And so it's not just blasted everywhere. You've told Google exactly where you want to show that ad. More importantly, it's likely to show in front of people who've already saw it on, like, TV or where else. It has a higher likelihood of converting. That's when I saw that a few minutes ago factor clicks in, and you click it because the commercial actually interests you and you just didn't get around to it.
Well,
because
you're scared that somebody's following you and you want to follow them.
Which brings me to my next one, the remarketing.
Yeah.
And so this is a great thing to do, right? Make sure you drop your code on your site so when people visit your site, you can drop that cookie on their browser, letting your system know that, hey, they visited, and then show them ads as they leave and peruse the internet. Any site that's using Google AdSense or has Google's ad network being displayed, show them an ad.
Even more important, for the longer your sales process is, the more important it is.
Yes, especially if you have one of those sales processes like, let's say you're doing siding, and it's not a one-call close. It requires a visit and then an estimate and then a follow-up proposal and then, you know, some negotiating.
And then a 2-month waiting period.
Exactly.
And then they buy.
Yeah. And then it takes some credit approval and all this kind of things where they could, during this time, that same client could be researching other people. Definitely set remarketing up. So no matter where they go, they get a constant reminder of you. That was remarketing. Remarketing works with the next one, audience list, right? So once you create these remarketing tags and you put them on their site, they go onto a certain list. Take advantage of the list. Google made it extremely easy to create multiple lists. You may want to have a list for people who landed on your site and didn't purchase, right? A list of people who made it halfway through the purchasing cycle but didn't quite check out,
right?
And then another list of people who checked out. And then you create different ads and show them that. Those who checked out, show them ads for products related to the ones they bought. Maybe those who almost went through the process but didn't, you can show them their product that they almost bought. That's a free one.
Don't forget this. Yeah,
don't forget to get this. And lastly, the people who didn't convert.
This fell out of your cart. Excuse me, ma'am. This fell out of your cart.
And imagine just seeing that on different sites.
Yeah.
As you leave the internet, I'll probably buy it just to stop seeing it.
Yeah.
So take advantage of those lists. Yeah. And this one here.
And maybe you offer that same item after they've checked out at a slightly discounted price.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, the object of it is the fact that these people have visited your site, they've shown some interest in whatever it is you're offering, and they've interacted in some way.
They're more likely to close.
Definitely.
To convert. Yep.
Automated bid rules. I try to stay away from automatic bids. I prefer to manage them myself, but right now that's because we're dealing with accounts from $1,000 to, $20,000 a month. If I was maybe managing $1 million accounts, then I probably would be automated bidding. but I try to stay away from those.
Task list for today, adjust 10,000 keyword
exactly.
Bid max.
Don't want to do it. Add extensions. Now, these are key. Site links, right? AdWords calls them extensions. Organics, when they show up, they call them site links. Same thing. Take advantage of them. Use a call tracking number, maybe a link to... I've been seeing all kind of new ad extensions now. You can let people sign up for your newsletter in your ad extension. If that's your primary CTA, if that's what you want to do, I personally wouldn't pay for a newsletter sign up, but you could do it.
Yeah. There are businesses that will.
That would do that.
That's their target. Absolutely.
Exactly. Especially if they have one of those longer sales processes and they notice that if they email your newsletter first, you have a higher likelihood of converting in the next 90 days. then I would pay to put you on my list.
Can you change that and have it instead of just the newsletter, like download our
Yeah, it could. Paper? They have hundreds of different ad extensions you could use. Phone numbers, downloads, newsletter signups.
And all of them bump up your per-click price, right?
Yeah. Cost per click goes up some. But if it's highly converting, then that quality score will go up. And that cost per click will go down for that same ad extension. So if it's performing well, then use it.
Yeah.
The last one here, PLAs, product listing ads. Remember Google Base, they kind of got rid of that and the whole Google Merchant deal. Now you have to manage that through AdWords. And so if you have an e-commerce site, you should be using, and you're doing pay-per-click, you should be doing this. And just make sure your product listing is correct. Right, that the price that you have submitted to Google is the price that is on your site. Yep. Make sure that, you know, all of everything is in sync. Or first off, it won't show. You'll get some error messages. And B, you don't want to create any confusion. People see it shown on Google and then they finally get to your site and the pricing is different.
Yeah.
That's a horrible experience and a bounce and probably a negative review.
After the click.
After you spent the money.
Yeah.
Exactly. And don't want to do that. So manage your product listing ads.
If you're a little uncomfortable with that, something that you can do is just start slow with those products that you make the most money on.
Yeah, start with one or two.
Yeah.
And then and go from there. But Joseph, great article, dude. Great tips. I'll post this on Facebook. And that was our meet.
Cool. That was awesome. Good stuff. Do we have any,
I don't think so.
I don't know. Just next. That's just a cool, really, it's not that surprising.
I know, it's not, but it's
actually surprising that Apple didn't get them, because most people assumed that the Next was an Apple device. Mm. It was so elegantly designed, and I know they hired the same designer.
The guy from there, yeah.
To do the design, so very, very cool. All right, well, this has been podcast number 221. Until the next podcast, my name is Chris Burrows.
Charles Lewis.
Bye bye for now. Slightly raised up eyebrow, highbrow. Tamely, gamely, headed my way. Cool as mountain snow, girl, glow, girl. Pining, shining, needing some play. Where have you been all my life? Something pure yet so refined. I'm gonna find my gold mine. I think she's gonna set me free.